and rolling. Hi, Paul.
So this is Mark Goldberg with UN Dispatch, speaking with the Oxford economist Paul Collier, author of The Bottom Billion and Wars, Guns, and Votes. Paul, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about Haiti today.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, you know, I'm a fan of your work, and, you know, what I really like about your approach to these issues is you seem to take a very sort of forensic approach. You sort of dissect societies and ask, you know, why certain countries are poor, why they aren't. I wanted to see if you can maybe apply that approach to Haiti, you know, and just try to answer the basic question of why Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go through that forensic approach, what you end up concluding is that it shouldn't be, or that at least it could be very feasible to make it a whole lot less poor.
So,
kind of one of the big disadvantages that many of the bottom billion face is that they're landlocked, which is a by which we mean really cut off from world markets. And Haiti is the opposite of that. It's got this superb location right offshore from the biggest market on Earth. And so that's a huge, huge opportunity. If you were to kind of draw concentric circles out from North America looking for low-wage economies, Haiti would just stand out as thousands of miles closer than any other low-wage economy to this huge North American market. So that's a massive opportunity to be harnessed.
And yet, you know, it seems that, you know, that for the past, you know, many years, that opportunity has not been harnessed, and Haiti has not emerged.
Right. So something's been wrong.
Right.
And let's keep on looking. So, one thing that is often a big negative, and occasionally a positive, but often a big negative, is big concentrations of valuable natural resources, which then sour the politics. Mm-hmm. And again, that's not Haiti. It's not sitting on oil or diamonds or anything like that, that have a lot of potential but typically mess up the politics. So we've not got that problem. Violent organized conflicts is another major trap, often associated with deep ethnic or religious divisions. Haiti's not that. It's not got significant ethnic or religious divisions, and nor has it got organized violent conflict. I mean, there's been problems of a sort of lower level disorder, but this is not a case of a, you know, sort of large organized rebel army sitting up there in the hills. We're already at a secure peace, stabilized by a large and effective United Nations peacekeeping force of basically Latin Americans, predominantly Brazilians, that's done a very good job and continues to do a good job. You know, sadly, I think 18 Brazilian peacekeepers got killed in the earthquake, but Brazil's really done a good job of stepping up to the plate in that need. So what we're left with is a long history of poor governance in a small state, low income, and it is difficult for countries or societies that start out small and poor and not much education, that start from poor governance, to drag themselves out of poor governance. The internal forces for reform of poor governance are quite weak. I have to say that Haiti was gradually climbing out, with the help of the international community and the presence of peacekeepers, things were getting better. And one indication of that was that after the hurricanes of the fall 2008, the government did manage to come up with a coherent response, which was its plan of April 2009, which was a coherent economic strategy. And there have been the first steps on the path to implementation of that strategy, helped by Bill Clinton, who was special UN envoy, brought in a lot of businessmen, and those business people had been very favorably impressed by opportunities in Haiti. So things were starting to improve in the few years in the run-up to this right. terrible disaster.
So it seems, you know, like the trend lines were pointing in the right direction, as you say. The peacekeeping force had sort of achieved a level of security. The government was sort of emerging as sort of a sort of independent and responsible government. But you know, then the hurricane hits, then the earthquake hits. And, you know, it seems as if a lot of the institutions of governance have been sort of destroyed in this hurricane. And I'm wondering sort of what can the international community do now to help Haiti recover? Sort of
yes.
What do you recommend? I know you've written on this a few times since the earthquake. I just sort of maybe can run down your top recommendations.
No, absolutely. I mean, the bitter reality is that the Haitian government, which was just starting to face the enormous difficulties of building up, has been shattered, so that its capacity to provide a coherent and organizing response to the earthquake, which would, even if the government hadn't been touched by the earthquake, the needs, the challenge of responding to this massive event would have been huge. So they probably, the needs coming from the earthquake would have swamped the government even had it been untouched. But of course what's happened is the government has been massively undermined by the earthquake. So so the government is in no position itself to decisively respond to the challenge of the earthquake. Fortunately, it had already done a lot of the work in that April 2009 plan. April 2009 is not long ago, and that was a coherent plan. Did it anticipate the earthquake? No. And so that strategy that it had has to be updated, but in fairly obvious ways. So there are three things that are kind of needed for Haiti to get not on the road to recovery, but on a new path. And that's a strategy, money, and a decision structure. And of those, the easiest is the strategy, because the foundations of a strategy that government had already laid just a few months ago. And how do we update that strategy in the wake of the earthquake? Well, it's not that difficult. One obvious thing is that there's a massive need for rehousing and for rebuilding infrastructure. It's also obvious that shouldn't all be done in Port-au-Prince. We now know that Port-au-Prince is a really pretty dangerous environment, and so where possible, relocating both people and economic activity to less dangerous environments should be a major priority. And the challenge there is that the steps that we take in the immediate relief period should be the first steps in a staircase leading to new opportunities. So the first decision, I think, is what sort of housing, temporary housing, gets provided. Is it tent cities just around Port-au-Prince, mm-hmm. or is it rudimentary but permanent housing elsewhere? And I very much hope it'll be the latter.
Okay.
It's possible to build one room structures very quickly, very cheaply, which then have the scope to be expanded mm-hmm. by households later on. So
that's your strategy recommendation.
That's step one.
Right.
Step two is then make sure that in that construction process, in building those residences, Haitians are themselves employed. The nightmare would be if NGOs fly in workers to do this work whilst Haitians stand and watch.
Mm-hmm.
So international organization needs to be provided,
yeah.
but it should be Haitians themselves who are doing the work, so that they are provided with jobs and an opportunity to earn. International organization, a lot of that can be private. Fortuitously, just across the sea in North America, the construction industry is facing its biggest slump since the 1930s. So there's a lot of underemployed construction organization which could be harnessed for reconstruction in Haiti.
Right, but not the actual American workers themselves, as you said.
Not the workers.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the workers, but the organization.
Yeah.
The skills of architects and all the ancillary things that are needed for construction to happen.
This reminds me actually of something. I think it was in Wars, Guns, and Vote, where you sort of half jokingly, well, I don't even know if you're joking, call for a construction workers without borders. To be deployed.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's can see it's sort of long. I can see where you're thinking. I wanted to, you need
the skilled people. Bring the skilled people in.
Right.
Bring the organizations in.
Yeah.
But harness local labor.
I wanted to ask you. I think this is probably the most controversial of your proposals. Is something along the lines of what you wrote in Foreign Policy magazine recently, which is this idea of bringing together, you know, almost a compact for Haiti.
Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering, can you explain what you mean by that and sort of what your proposal is?
Absolutely. Can I just say that just before we get to that,
sure.
The vital thing following on from building houses
right.
is that job opportunities have to come following that house building.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to happen, first of all, the housing has to be sited in places that have economic potential. And secondly, the infrastructure has to be built that makes that economic potential a reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the strategy. It'll cost money. I think coherent strategy in the present international concern about Haiti, once there's a coherent strategy, there'll be money. I can't guarantee that, but I think that's very likely, because the orders of magnitude involved are not huge. Haiti's not a big place, it's not that many people. So this is not astronomic sums of money. The hardest thing is to get a decision structure that works. Remember that there are two kinds of decision problem that we're going to encounter. One is international and one is domestic. Internationally, the international community in Haiti, there's 10,000 NGOs, there's loads of international actors, and they all want to do their own thing, Better than doing their own thing, they'd like to coordinate others, but nobody wants to be coordinated. Right? And so there has to be a decision structure which can force coordination on the international actors, and indeed force accountability on the NGOs.
Okay.
So that is would require a big break with past behaviour. Everybody pays lip service to coordination, and nobody does it. And that's the bitter truth, both of history in Haiti and history internationally. But the secondly is a problem of coordination and implementation within the Haitian government. That the history of the Haitian government is not one of decisive and rapid action, and it's been substantially incapacitated by the devastation of the earthquake. So we need a decision structure which imposes order on the international community, but the Haitian government itself, by itself, is not in a position to do that. And so, to my mind, the simplest solution is to create some short-term authority with a 3-year horizon of authority, which combines a very senior and respected Haitian, such as the present Prime Minister, together with a senior international figure. That's not even for me to suggest who that might be, but there are Haiti's fortunate in having a number of senior international figures who are concerned.
I think euphemistically you might be referring to Bill Clinton, but
let's imagine that there was a Bill Clinton.
Okay.
And so kind of Prime Minister Belrive together with Bill Clinton would be a really powerful team to force coherence.
Yeah.
On money and the international actors, and also to force the critical necessary actions within the country. For example, there won't be economic opportunities unless there's electric power.
Yeah.
So electric power has to be provided where the new centres of economic activity are being built, and that means power stations have to be built, and systems for providing that electricity, for pricing it, and for paying for it have to be established. To date, there's been chronic power shortages in Haiti, so it can't just be we'll pick up the system that's already there. The system that's already there wasn't working even before it all got knocked down.
I don't know if you had a chance to see, but last week on Capitol Hill there was a hearing in the Senate on Haiti. Paul Farmer and Jim Dobbins testified, and Chris Dodd, senator from Connecticut, notable liberal, suggested the idea, I think along the lines of what you're suggesting, which is this concept of having some sort of receivership for all these funds to coordinate these actions. And he was joined by a more conservative member of the Senate, Corker from Tennessee. So there seems to, that idea, I think, seems to be coalescing in the Senate. And there's a chance that the Senate might have to pass a supplemental budget for Haiti if the funds end up being that much. So I'm wondering, does this concept, though, just to maybe play the devil's advocate, have some sort of peril in that your long-term goal is to build up institutions of Haitian governance, yet they're not in charge of the money coming into their country?
Okay. First of all, I think a fund of funds is really important to impose some coherence on what is otherwise going to be every international actor spending their own pot of money in their own way. So we need to impose some financial coherence, and that is either a common fund or a fund of funds, something like that. And I don't see this being a left-right issue at all, but the only chance the Haitians have of imposing some order on the international zoo is with some common fund. Mm-hmm. Secondly, and it's really just elaborating that point that this is not a matter of taking power off the Haitians. It's giving power to the Haitians. That the default option, if nothing is done, is that every minor international actor will have a finger in the pie in Haiti and will do their own thing. The Haitian government will not be able to control what happens. And so creating a common entity, a common agency, which is a common authority, which is run by a very senior member of the Haitian government, I would go to prime minister level, because that's the executive position that kind of matters for implementation. And linking that up with a senior member of the international community, that's the best chance the Haitians have in reality of guiding things. Now, if we give a time frame of, say, something like 3 years to such an authority, it has to be accountable to whatever emerges as a revitalized Haitian government. And the one way to do that will be to say right at the beginning, in 3 years' time, there'll be a review by the Haitian government that emerges in 3 years' time. There'll be a review and an assessment of how this interim authority has worked. And so the interim authority knows right from the beginning that it's going to be subject to open scrutiny by the future Haitian government. So once the Haitian government is in a position to act, it will inherit the structures that the Prime Minister has been running in the meantime. And of course, it's building on the plan that the Haitian government put together in April 2009, there's not likely to be large deviations from what the Haitian government wants. Right? So, because there's a Haitian government strategy in place, I think the task of running the interim until the Haitian government is back on its feet is not that daunting.
Mm-hmm. We're just about out of time. I wanted to give you one last opportunity if there's anything else you might want to add to this conversation, or any recommended reading links that you have for us. Let us know. Now's your last chance.
The report I did for the UN back in January is kind of one starting point.
Yeah.
That went through some of the opportunities.
Yeah.
And I want to close on a note of opportunity. Haiti is on all the lists of fragile states, but it's fundamentally different from most of the other countries on that list, that there are opportunities that really can be reaped quite quickly. And so it's possible for Haiti to get on a completely different course. The fact that it's by far the poorest state in the Western Hemisphere tells us something. It needn't be that poor.
All right. Well, Paul, thank you so much. And I'll continue to follow your excellent work on this topic.
Thank you.